content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles initially from the Harvard Heart Letter and later from the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article concerns a broken heart syndrome, and this is from the Harvard Heart Letter of February 2025. Our understanding of this unusual condition, also known as Takotsubo syndrome, has evolved in recent decades. As the name suggests, broken heart syndrome can arise in response to grief and other intense emotions. The symptoms, which include sudden squeezing chest pain and shortness of breath, mimic those of a heart attack. However, this often reversible but potentially serious condition is more commonly precipitated by physical stress caused by severe illness or surgery. Most cases of the syndrome occur in women, but the proportion of cases recognized in men has risen in recent decades, according to a study published in September 2024 in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. The findings come from an international registry of 4,000 people who were diagnosed with the condition between 2004 and 2021. The registry uses the original and now preferred term Takotsubo syndrome, which was coined by the Japanese physicians who first described it in the early 1990s. During an episode, the heart takes on an unusual shape that resembles a Takotsubo or octopus pot, a traditional clay vessel a fisherman uses to trap an octopus. The new report provides a more modern view of Takotsubo syndrome, says Dr. Michael Osborne, a cardiologist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. It shows the diversity of possible causes and presentations of Takotsubo syndrome and gives us a better sense of how people may be affected. For example, men now make up 15% of cases, up from 10% in 2004. But this shift and other changes may stem from increased awareness and diagnoses rather than an actual change in the demographic. Takotsubo triggers. Over the years, the recording of physical triggers for Takotsubo syndrome rose from 39% to 58% of cases. They include serious medical conditions like stroke, surgery, infection, cancer, and injuries. About one-third of all cases were attributed to emotional triggers like grief, loss, anger, frustration, or interpersonal conflict. A small number were spurred by positive events, a phenomenon dubbed happy heart syndrome that for unknown reasons was mainly seen in men. Causes reported included weddings, surprise parties, and the birth of a grandchild. All of these trigger and activate the body's fight or flight response, prompting an outpouring of stress hormones like adrenaline. This surge of hormones stuns the heart's microscopic vessels, limiting blood flow to part of the heart, says Dr. Osborne. This insult may temporarily alter the shape of the left ventricle, the heart's main pumping chamber. The bottom tip of the heart balloons outward, while the top narrows, creating the shape of an octopus pot. But sometimes the midsection of the ventricle swells instead, creating a shape more akin to an amphora, an ancient Greek vase. The prevalence of this less common heart shape increased from 18 to 28% over the registry study period. Most people fully recover within weeks to months, but the registry data suggests that those who also have other serious heart conditions or health conditions face a higher risk of dying within 2 months after a Takotsubo syndrome diagnosis. Doctors start their evaluation with an electrocardiogram, a test that records the heart's electrical activity. The electrocardiogram may show abnormalities typical of heart muscle injury, which can occur from either a heart attack or Takotsubo syndrome. Both conditions can cause a rise in blood levels of troponin, a protein released from damaged heart muscle. A coronary angiogram may be done to check for a blockage that would indicate a heart attack. But in Takotsubo syndrome, the heart's arteries are clear. A heart ultrasound can reveal the characteristic change in the heart shape to confirm the diagnosis. Treating Takotsubo syndrome often includes blood pressure drugs, including ACE inhibitors, angiotensin receptor blockers, and beta blockers, which help lower the heart's workload and tamp down the body's stress response. There's no direct evidence that stress reduction can prevent Takotsubo syndrome or its recurrence, but many clues suggest practices like meditation and deep breathing can help by modifying activity in brain regions that respond to stress. Dr. Osborne says, other than a small time investment, there are no downsides to practicing stress-busting techniques, and it may lower your risk of other heart-related conditions. Now I'm going to turn to the Harvard Health Letter. This is the Harvard Health Letter of February 2025. And the first thing I'm going to cover is the Ask the Doctor section with Dr. Anthony Komaroff, who is the editor-in-chief. And the question is, does exercise offset the risk of sitting? The correspondent says, I'm 63 and take brisk walks for a total of 2 to 3 hours a week, just like you recommend. But the rest of the time I sit at a computer, at the kitchen table, or in front of the TV. Is that healthy? Doing moderate to vigorous physical activity for at least 150 minutes per week improves your health, but 150 minutes per week is just 2 to 3% of the time that you're awake. Is it really okay to be a couch potato for 97 to 98% of the time? A new international study led by a Harvard team published online in November 2024 by the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, followed 90,000 people whose average age was 62 for about a decade. A careful record was kept of their past diseases, the development of new diseases, and factors that influence their risk of major diseases. For 1 week, a small sensor was strapped to their wrist, which measured the amount of time they were asleep, sedentary, engaging in light activity, or engaging to moderate to vigorous activity. The study confirmed again that moderate to vigorous physical activity for 150 minutes per week does improve your health, particularly your heart health. The study also was able to show that among those people who got the recommended amount of moderate to vigorous physical activity, those who were the most sedentary the rest of the time had a greater risk of developing heart failure and dying from heart disease when compared to those who were less sedentary. Why does regular physical activity protect our health? There are two ways of asking that question. Why should it, and how does it? Let's start with why should it. Humans have been around for 200,000 years. In 1700, 80% of the people in the United States were farmers. By 1900, it was down to 40%. Today, it's less than 2%. In other words, at least in developed nations, people are not as physically active as humans have been for almost all the time our species has existed. It sort of stands to reason that such an abrupt change in something so fundamental as physical exertion might be detrimental. As to how does it, in just the past 20 years, doctors have been discovering health-promoting molecules that are produced by our bodies when we exercise. The discoveries so far only scratch the surface, and none yet have led to an exercise pill. I get my required amount of moderate to vigorous physical activity every week. But after reading this study, I've decided to get up every hour and climb the stairs. I think being active throughout the day will improve my health. And now again from the Harvard Health Letter, here's a useful article entitled, Are You Taking Too Many Medications? Learn the Risk of Polypharmacy and How to Safely Manage Your Medications. How many medications do you take? Most U.S. adults aged 40 to 79 use at least one prescription drug, and 22% of us take five or more. The number might be higher if you have several chronic conditions, and when you factor over-the-counter drugs like aspirin or sleep aids, vitamins, supplements, your pill burden can grow to double digits. The more medications, the greater your risk for problems. To stay safe, learn about the perils of polypharmacy, which means taking five or more drugs a day, and ways to manage it. Taking a lot of medications increases the chance that you might experience a dangerous drug interaction, especially if your doctors aren't communicating with each other about what they're prescribing, or if you use several different pharmacies. There are several types of drug interactions. One is drug metabolism. Sometimes one medication changes how fast the liver breaks down another drug. The affected drug can then stay in your body too long, become too potent, or it can exit too quickly without time to work properly. For example, the heartburn drug cimetidine or Tagamet can inhibit certain liver enzymes, slowing the removal of the anticoagulant warfarin from the body. That can increase warfarin's ability to prevent blood clots, but that might cause bleeding. In contrast, the herbal remedy St. John's wort, that's W-O-R-T, stimulates liver enzymes, hurrying warfarin out of the body. That reduces the effect of warfarin and increases blood clot risk. Sometimes two drugs have the same effect at the same time, causing a powerful result. For example, taking an opioid and a sleep pill together. They both depress the central nervous system. The effect becomes amplified, which can cause your breathing to slow down too much, says Jigar Mehta, a pharmacist at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. In some cases, one medication can block the absorption of another. For example, calcium carbonate can block the absorption of the thyroid drug levothyroxine or Synthroid. Polypharmacy has additional problems. A large drug regimen is expensive and inconvenient. It can be hard to manage, which increases the chance for errors, like a missed dose or an overdose. And polypharmacy can be so stressful or confusing that you just give up and stop adhering to the program. Polypharmacy also boosts the odds that you'll experience a drug side effect, which are sometimes misinterpreted. When a medication is causing a side effect like diarrhea or constipation that could be missed or could be a symptom of aging, your team might prescribe an additional medication to treat the diarrhea or constipation, adding to your burden, Mehta says. And sometimes certain pills create a high-risk situation when taken together. Suppose you take a diuretic for high blood pressure, and you take tramadol for pain. The diuretic can cause frequent urination and dehydration, and the tramadol can make you feel groggy or dizzy. The combination can cause frequent bathroom trips, and the dizziness can lead to a fall. Taking more than five medications may be necessary for your health and symptom control, but you must pay extra attention. First of all, you need to know what you are taking. Learn every pill's name, its appearance, and job. Ask why it's necessary and whether it might cause side effects. Find out what to do if you miss a dose or if side effects develop. Keep a journal. If you're concerned you may be having medication problems, use a notebook or smartphone to track the day, time, and dose of each drug you take, and the date and time of any unusual symptoms. Bring the journal to your doctor's visits, so the doctor will be able to tell if a drug is working or causing side effects. Think about using organizational tools, a section pill box, an automatic pill dispenser, or even a phone alarm can help you to stick to your medication regimen. Try to downsize. Metza recommends scheduling a complete medication review with your doctor or pharmacist once a year and asking if any pills can be omitted. Perhaps there's overlap among drugs, or maybe there's one you've been taking for years, like a heartburn medication, that was intended only for a short time and is no longer needed. Don't stop a pill on your own. It can be dangerous to abruptly stop certain medications like antidepressants. Work with your doctor to gradually decrease the amount you take. The act of de-prescribing may be just as carefully managed as prescribing, Meta says. Also, you should dispose of unneeded pills. You don't want old pills around the house where you or a loved one might take them accidentally. Don't just toss them in the trash or toilet. Many, but not all, pharmacies have drug take-back boxes for proper disposal. Finally, you need to stay vigilant. The only constant in life is change, and your medication plan will evolve as time goes on. Stay alert to polypharmacy dangers, and don't let your guard down. Now here's another useful article, and it's entitled, Does Drinking Tea Really Help Health? Again, from the Harvard Health Letter of February. We don't have conclusive evidence yet, but the findings are promising. Tea is one of the most popular drinks in the world. Served warm, it's a soothing cup of comfort. Poured over ice, it's a refreshing pick-me-up. The brew is steeped in cultural significance in many countries, a staple of relaxation, tranquility, hospitality, and tradition. The ancient elixir is also prized for its potent health perks. But is tea really good for us? What is tea? All tea comes from the leaves of the same plant, Camellia sinensis. What makes the teas different is how the tea leaves are processed, dried, steamed, rolled, or oxidized. The combination of processing methods determines the tea's color, taste, and type. Black tea is rolled and oxidized, which deepens its amber, red, or brown color. Green tea is steamed to stop oxidation, preserving a fresh green color and milder taste. You won't find many vitamins or nutrients in tea, but it's rich in phytochemicals, compounds that give plants their characteristics and have pharmacologic effects when we consume them. Tea's primary phytochemicals are caffeine and polyphenols. The amount and type of phytochemicals in tea depends on how the leaves are processed. Teas that are not oxidized contain high levels of polyphenols called catechins. Fully oxidized teas are abundant in polyphenols called theaflavins and thiorubigins. Another example, green tea has more polyphenols than black tea, but black tea has more caffeine. And matcha is dried green tea, ground into fine particles. It's more concentrated and therefore higher in caffeine and polyphenols than plain green tea. Is tea good for you? Hundreds of studies have been published. On the health effects of tea. But they don't offer conclusive evidence. Many studies are small or conducted for short periods. And most studies on tea, even large ones, are observational, assessing only an association between tea consumption and health, not necessarily a cause and effect. Also, some studies have been conducted only in labs or in animals, and many studies have been conducted in populations that are hard to compare, such as people in Asia who primarily drink green tea and are more likely to follow traditional Asian diets, or people in Western countries where black tea is popular and diets are often poor. But the overall direction of research indicates a potential benefit, Dr. Hu says. For example, catechins in green tea have higher antioxidant and anti-inflammatory effects in animal models and test tube studies. Polyphenols like quercetin in black tea have similar anti-inflammatory effects. Research suggests that tea's anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties might help lower risks of chronic disease. Several recent analyses have found that higher consumption of tea, especially black tea and green tea, are associated with reduced risk of heart attack, high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, and early death. And some studies suggest that drinking tea might help reduce stress and improve mental health. A 2023 analysis of studies involving more than 410,000 people published by Peer indicated that drinking tea might reduce dementia risk by 29%. Tea consumption might even help you live longer. For example, a 2020 observational study of 5,000 people in Japan, published by BMJ Open Diabetes Research and Care, found that drinking 4 cups of green tea per day was linked to a 40% lower risk of premature death. Plus, tea has caffeine, which provides a burst of energy and mental clarity. Dr. Hu says that health benefits of tea come with drinking 2 to 4 daily cups of green, black, or oolong tea. Other types of tea, like the fermented tea called pu'er, might also be good for your health, though the supporting evidence is more limited. The effects of tea aren't all rosy. If you add a lot of sweetener and cream to your tea, you're increasing your calorie, fat, and sugar intake. If you have insomnia or an irregular heartbeat, the caffeine in tea might trigger symptoms. And drinking tea that's too hot might damage your esophagus and increase cancer risk. But in general, tea is part of a healthy diet. And it's comforting, Dr. Hu says. There's something about the enjoyment of tea that's worth considering. Now, very briefly, there's a section in here about three stretches to relieve knee pain. And the stretches they recommend are calf stretch, hamstring stretch, and quad stretch. To do the calf stretch, you stand up straight and hold the back of a chair for support. Extend your right leg straight back and press the heel against the floor. Allow your left knee to bend while keeping that heel on the floor. Feel the stretch in the back of your lower right leg. To do a hamstring stretch, you extend your left leg straight in front of you, heel on the floor and toes pointing up. Place your hands on your thighs and hinge forward from the hip. Bend your right knee and lower your buttocks. As a result, you feel stretch in the back of your left thigh. And then the quad stretch involves standing up straight, feet together, holding the back of a chair, and bend your right knee and reach back with your right hand to grasp your foot, lifting it toward the right buttock. You should feel the stretch in the front of your thigh. Slowly lower your foot to the floor and repeat the stretch with your left leg. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoy it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.